The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live on the West Coast this morning. Bravo, Georgia dog. Crushing Alabama 33-18 in the national championship. Hats off to you folks up and down the Peach State. We're going to hold a moment of silence, though, for our vice president of Salem Media, Tom Tradip. Can we just pause for 3 seconds? One, two, three. Tom will be out for a couple of weeks. He's already saying word. Not a week goes by they don't get Tide propaganda from Tom. So he's, you know, Tom Tradip Tide. I think Tide is his middle name. He's a wonderful man, but we're just feeling bad for him this morning. Not really. We're very happy. You Alabama fans understand this means you'll draft just behind the Browns in the NFL draft in April. So don't feel bad about that. They have their number. I didn't stay up to watch the game. I didn't. I thought Alabama would crush them. So I am legitimately surprised and pleased this morning to find Georgia 33, Alabama 18. Now let's get to the serious news. I need some help from my Chinese American listeners. 1-800-520-1234. To the CCP spies who are listening every day, I don't need your help. Chinese American listeners, 1-800-520-1234. Major COVID outbreak in 5 cities in China. All right, so last week we knew that they had an outbreak in Xi'an, and they locked the city down tight. We knew that 2 weeks ago. I said that on Special Report. I'll be back on Special Report with Brett Baer tonight. Muscle memory. Brett Hume did it for many years. Brett Baer has done it for a decade, so it takes a long time for my muscles to change. But I'll be on with Brett tonight. And a couple of weeks ago, I said the headline of the morning would be Xi'an locked down. And they've done the Wuhan shuffle there, you know, shoot on sight sort of stuff. Not really. They're arresting people, though. And now it has spread to Zhengzhou, Anyang, Yuzhou, and who knows who else. My question is, and they say it's Omicron, how do we trust the Chinese Communist Party on anything? They allowed this virus to escape in its original form. They didn't tell the world. They allowed Wuhan planes to keep flying around the world while they embargoed them from flying anywhere in Wuhan in China. I continue to believe, though this has not been confirmed by our intelligence analysts, that when you shut down planes inside your country, but you let them go elsewhere, you're intending for the world to get whatever you've got in order to slow down the world when you slow down. Now they've got outbreaks in 5 cities. And one of these cities, Zhengzhou, I believe. 1-800-520-1234 if you want to help me with the pronunciation. Zhengzhou is 62 miles from Beijing. The genocide games open up there in 2 weeks. Why are we sending anyone to the genocide games to begin with? But now that they've got an outbreak in 5 cities, which means in Chinese CCP land, 55 cities, and they say it's Omicron, which means it's probably a different variant. Why are we doing that? Why are we going near? They should be a pariah in the world. But that's the biggest headline of the day. Intel, by the way, an American company, has kowtowed to the CCP. They deleted a reference to the slave labor in concentration camps in Xinjiang, where the Muslim Uyghurs are being rounded up. To our north, Prime Minister, you know, Trudeau has said Canada has enough vaccines for all Canadians to get a fourth dose. Meanwhile, the United States has issued a travel warning. Don't go to Canada. Something's wrong up there. Australia is swamped in their hospitals by Omicron. Our rate in the United States are up to 132,000 Omicron cases hospitalized. I don't know how many we're having a day. It should be about 250,000 a day, but 132,000 are hospitalized. And the White House announced yesterday that United States insurers must cover 8 at-home COVID tests per person monthly. Now, I don't understand how they get to do that. Those are expensive. If you go to Walmart or CVS or someplace like that, they're going to cost, I think, $20. I haven't bought one yet. I went to a clinic before we moved from east to west to IEA Waste for the winter. We come to the IEA Waste, otherwise known as California, for winter, for Q1. That was the condition when I took over for Bill Bennett in the morning, fetching Mrs. Hewitt, said, fine, you work from 6 to 9. But I'm not going to live in D.C. in Q1. And so that's our deal. So I come out here in Q1 and get up in the middle of the night. But it's fine. I'm ahead of everybody else when it comes to the news. But in any event, we got tested before we traveled because both my boys had COVID. My daughter-in-law may have had COVID. And everyone around us had COVID. Recent cases, breakout cases, are all vaccinated. Of course, we're a family that believes in science, and vaccination and boosters are science. But and my three grandkids have had COVID, and they weren't vaccinated, and they're fine. Anecdotal evidence is evidence of anecdotes. That's it. So I don't generalize from anything. I just read the science and tell you what the science is, even though the CDC can't seem to do that. And so we came here fine, but everyone out here has got it too. But we just went out to dinner the last three nights, and fetching Mrs. Hewitt sort of believes in cooking, but not so much in California. She believes in the sunshine on the backyard and reading, and I'm with her on that. Meanwhile, 8 COVID cases per American for their insurance companies. That's not free. That's not free. I don't know where that comes from. They're not like, they don't have a pool of money designated giveaway money. Reuters has an analysis that Biden's 2022 pitch is going to target Trump acolytes and woo swing voters. That's a headline for you. The president's going to Atlanta today, AM 920. People be on the alert. I've already told you that the China has tightened restrictions in the city of 14 million. That city is 62 miles from Beijing. So Olympians, you're going to get sick. You're going to get sick. And if you say anything wrong, they're going to jail you. Honestly, you're crazy to go to that country. Fed prepares to shrink their $90 trillion balance sheet. Now, what do you think that's going to do to the economy? That's why the economy sucked for the last 10 days on the stock market. Mitch McConnell issued a threat yesterday to Democrats on everything he's going to do to gum up the Senate. Now, I don't think he has to worry because Joe Manchin gave his word. He's not changing the filibuster. I don't think he's a liar. And Joe Biden, if he wanted to change the filibuster, he shouldn't be going to Atlanta. Nobody told him. He should be going to Charleston and Wheeling and Phoenix and Tucson, because Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are the reason the filibuster is not going to change. God bless them. The Treasury warns of enormous challenges this tax filing season that could delay refunds. That's like the refund owed my son and I from HUD, from the Fair Housing Authority, for a house sold 3 years ago. They owe us $4,000, and they won't give it to us because we don't have the deed, despite, I don't know, 10 phone calls with them where I thought, we don't have the deed. We sold the house. It was my son's first house. I co-signed with him, which is what you should do if your son or daughter is buying their first house. He did this, 8 years ago, FHA loan. And they'll give us the deed and we'll send you the money. We don't have the deed. And they said, well, we can't get the deed because it's a California house. This is when he moved to Virginia. And I said, okay, I'm just going to start talking about you on the radio. Pfizer CEO questions whether or not you need a fourth dose of COVID. Meanwhile, Israel is giving out the fourth dose of COVID, and Moderna says you need a fourth. You know, who knows? In a world first, U.S. surgeons have successfully transplanted a pig heart into a human patient at the University of Maryland. This explains why they can't play football, but they do great medicine. They put all their resources. Now, when I was young and the first heart transplants were happening, we would watch. It was a day-by-day deal. We would watch the recipient and, you know, root for them to live. I'm quite sure this person's going to live. It's going to be, you know, they don't do this anymore. David Bennett, 57-year-old Maryland handyman. Go, David Bennett. That's also a lead in the New York Times. In a first, man receives heart from a genetically altered pig. Whew. U.S.-Russia talks yield little overall progress. Wendy Sherman, the giveaway gal, she's the Golden Girl giveaway gal, came out of the meeting yesterday and said, we're not going to give up too much. That's really, in summary, what she said. Maybe we'll give them the INF treaty back. We don't want the INF treaty back. They're liars and cheaters. When you send Wendy Sherman, you got a Munich happening. North Korea has launched an unidentified projectile, and Boris Johnson is in deep trouble at home because he went to an end-of-year party, breaking all the COVID breakdown rules. Meanwhile, They've got a brand new dinosaur in Great Britain. I mean, they when we come back, we'll tell you about this brand new dinosaur. I like dinosaur stories. And as you know, it's called an Ithacaris, I believe. We'll come back with Ithigu Park. I don't know if it's been found in Ithigu Park, in Ichigu Park, but it's the Ithacaris. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. David Drucker wasn't at Woodstock, though he could be mistaken for a Woodstock generation guy. He is coming to the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda to talk about In Trump's Shadow, his brand new book. I'm not sure what day you're doing that, David. When are you going to be in Yorba Linda?
January 26th.
All right. So my friend Jim Byron, my successor as the president, will be interviewing you, and I hope we get a big sellout crowd. We actually haven't had too much of an impact of Omicron out here. People are over it. It's not like D.C. How is a book tour in the age of Omicron? Is it mostly virtual? Are you able to get out there with your 12 books? I mean, they're the best publisher in America, In Trump's Shadow.
Yeah, look, Hugh, it's actually for me been a mixture. And so I really haven't felt inhibited. I've done a couple of book swings, been in New Hampshire, been to Michigan. I'm going to do two Ohio soon. Obviously, I'm going to California for the Nixon Library. I've done a number of live events in Washington. So I haven't been greatly inhibited, but I have done some virtual events. And there may be some events that maybe just didn't happen because they really can only be in person, but I'm still expecting to get some of those done. So I feel more fortunate than a lot of my colleagues whose books came out literally in the middle of the pandemic, in the beginning when we didn't know much about the coronavirus and we were all taking aggressive precautions.
So my question, David, I remember your book, and we went through the list of people you consider possible. I have now have a segment. Generalissimo collects via the various services every appearance by every person in Trump's shadow. And yesterday we had Doug Ducey give the State of the State, a couple of hits at Biden in there. Tom Cotton on Fox and Friends talking about Putin, and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Fox with Harris Faulkner talking about 2022. I do consider the Fox scoreboard. Now, I'm on a lot. I'm going to be on special report tonight. I am not running for president. But generally speaking, if I see someone popping up on Fox, I say to myself, they're reaching the base.
That's correct. I mean, and, you know, we like to refer to it shorthand sometimes as the Fox primary or the Hannity primary or the Tucker primary in particular these days. Tucker Carlson show is, I think, the most watched on the network and probably has the most influence with grassroots Republicans.
No, that's not true. Special Report has me on it, so it has the most influence.
Yeah, well, that's my favorite show on Fox, so I consider it the most influential. But I touch on this in Trump's Shadow. You know, during the pandemic, during the riots, even now, you know, I describe Tucker Carlson tonight as sort of the soundtrack of the conservative resistance to all of the coronavirus policies implemented across the country by Democrats and Republicans alike. Tucker has really become a force. We saw that last week with Ted Cruz's appearance on the show trying to explain how he describes January 6th. So all I am saying is this is your observation is correct about Fox News Channel. It is still a force to be reckoned with in Republican politics. And continues to be a place where Republicans go to talk to their voters.
Now, I have a proposition for you. I do Special Report for one reason. I left NBC in December, and I can go wherever I want, and I choose to go to Fox Special Report because they're the last news show in America. I mean, they really are a news show. The opinion show starts at 7. They go to opinion broadcasting. Jesse Waters got the coveted 7 p.m. slot after 1,000 people tried out. He's a very fine TV personality. I think there will be a Jesse primary now. Do you agree?
I don't know. Let's see. I mean, it's very possible. I'm not saying there won't be. It sort of depends on how the ratings shake out and how he handles his show. I mean, part of what makes any particular show its own sort of sub-primary in the 2024 process and all of these processes, and this includes races for Congress and governor and all of that, is a function of the host, what the host likes to cover, and where the host falls on the political spectrum. You know, one of the things that makes special report unique is it is a news show. And even the panel is very analytically based. And it's one of the best panels on TV because there's no shouting, there's no screaming.
There's no stepping on each other. The only time I step on someone is when I mishear my name. We're not in studio because of the virus, but therefore it's in your ear. And sometimes I'll mishear and I'll speak when it's not supposed to be. But Brett runs a good show. My question for you is, in terms of the Fox primary, is it decisive in your view?
It's not decisive, but what Fox can be necessarily, but what Fox is often is such a big megaphone that it can drown out messaging. You know, one of the things, and I cover this in Interim Shadow, one of the things that happened in 2016, and I talked to so many Republicans about this that were not Trump and not of the in the Trump camp, is that Trump became such a force in that 16 primary that all of the other 16 candidates were on Fox all the time, like constantly, multiple times a day. And the only thing they were asked about by news hosts and opinion hosts alike were, what about what Trump said? Oh, by the way, we're going to a hard break. Do you have anything to add in 10 seconds?
And by the way, CCP and CNN was running Trump wall-to-wall with Anderson and Jake and everybody else. Wall-to-wall Trump over on Fox, everybody else. Trump did Fox as well, but it was a wild year. That's not this year. I'll have to leave it. I think Brett Baer, if he does turn out to be the host of Fox News Sunday, will crush the other Sunday shows. Don't go anywhere except to see David Drucker at the Nixon Library. I'll be right back, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Straight ahead. Morning, Glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. The other Alabama team showed up last night, and so Georgia is the national champion. We continue to mourn for our friend Tom Tradup, who is never seen without his Crimson Tide T-shirt on. Sorry, Tom. The big news of the day, though, and I'm joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner, Fox News Channel, to comment on it and other stories, is that another city in China is under lockdown. This time, it's the city of Tianjin, which is only 62 miles from Beijing. Lockdown that joins four other cities in China that are locked down. Byron, at what point do people say, well, they didn't tell us about the first breakout. How much can we trust them about this one? And do we really want to send Olympians from around the world there?
Well, you would think we would have gotten to that point already. And by the way, on the Alabama game, I was saddened by it myself, but I think a lot of the season they had been putting things together with duct tape, and you can only do that so far, and it didn't.
And Byron, you get to draft higher in the NFL draft in April. That's good for Nick Saban, so that's good.
Well, I mean, this was supposedly the rebuilding year, and they ended up in the national championship.
I didn't know you were a Tide guy. Really, we're going to have to drop Byron. We don't let those people next to Michigan and USC fans. We don't let them on.
Well, if I have to suffer for my principles, then...
Did you go to Alabama?
I'm afraid I did, yes.
You are a Tide man. I had no idea.
When I was growing up, you were in Alabama. Obviously, you were either for Alabama or you were for Auburn. And I was for Alabama, obviously. And it was one of these things where, it's not enough that Alabama must win, but Auburn must lose. I mean, there's...
Well, yeah, that's Ohio State.
One of these interstate rivalries.
Yeah, really, when you grow up this really way, that's how I really don't have any dog in the fight in the SEC. It's all paid for anyway and propped up by ESPN, and it's completely biased in the ranking, so I don't really care about the SEC. But when Ohio State gets Alabama next year, we'll talk. Talk to me more about China in the Olympics, though. This is a real problem.
It is a real problem, and China has stonewalled any efforts to investigate the origins of this disease. They, obviously we started in a situation in which the commentariat here in Washington in the United States just completely rejected this idea that it could have come from a lab in China, from some sort of unspecified accident in a lab in China. And then now there's kind of a general belief that that's likely what happened. And yet, China will still receive the the prestige, the exposure, the global prestige of holding an Olympic Games. It's really an incredible series of events, given what China unleashed on to the world.
And given that, Byron, I'm just talking about the athletes now. How do we know it's Omicron? Honestly, because why would we believe anything they say?
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, I mean, when they shut down a place, they really...
They shut down a place. Yeah, yeah,
I mean, totalitarian. You know, we don't like it. You know, if the restaurants can only have 25% of their capacity in a room or something like that, which happened early on in the pandemic here in the United States. But when they shut down a place, it's shut down.
Byron, the president and the vice president and pretty much every Democrat in Congress is going to Atlanta today. I went to Atlanta a couple months ago to do an event with Herschel Walker, and I learned don't get between a Georgia fan and Herschel. A, will anyone show up for Joe Biden? And B, what's he going to tell a state that actually I think he's polling in the 30s there?
Here is the thing. I am looking at CNN right now, and the the Chiron across the bottom says voting rights group boycotting Biden speech. We're not, quote, props.
Oh, so, my.
So he and Vice President Biden, Vice President, are going down to Atlanta to push the voting bill. It was called For the People Act in the House and the Freedom to Vote Act in the Senate, which would, you've discussed it at length, it would federalize election procedures across the country on terms that are very, very favorable to Democrats. It's an extremely partisan bill that they call voting rights, even though we just had, you know, the highest voter turnout in a century. So, anyway, they're going down there to promote this bill, and the voting rights groups down in Atlanta are going to boycott the event. Stacey Abrams, the governor Abrams, the hero of the Democratic voting rights campaign, is busy. Oh gosh, you're the president and the vice president. You're coming down. Oh boy, I really wish I'd be there.
She's not showing up.
She's not going to be there.
Oh, that's okay. The political story of the day.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And so this is, and obviously Biden and the Democrats have sort of pivoted to this voting stuff because they can't get the Build Back Better thing through the Senate. And they can use voting as kind of a special case in their argument to get rid of the filibuster, that we need to knock a specific hole, a carve out in the filibuster for voting bills. So they've used this, but the voting groups are saying, the civil rights groups in Atlanta are saying, well, isn't that very nice? You, President Biden, made a little nod toward voting rights early on, and then you immediately turned to your infrastructure bill and your COVID relief bill and your big everything bill, Build Back Better, and, oh, now you can't get it, and you've turned back to voting rights. Well, we want more consistent action, please.
I got to ask you, speaking of pivoting, Javier Becerra, the head of HHS yesterday, threw Walensky under the bus. Dr. Walensky, Dr. Fauci are becoming the expendables. Cut number 7.
I'm not where they fall. Let me tell you what I think. First, Dr. Rochelle Walensky is an infectious disease expert. She has a medical license, and she also has a degree in public health. She doesn't have a degree in marketing.
That's good enough. What does that mean to you, Byron?
That means she's way under the bus.
Way under.
She had said so many things, and there's, by the way, I mean, there's confusion today, and there was all day yesterday about what she'd said about this four comorbidities thing, which had been misunderstood largely because she's been unclear, and so she has been pretty disastrous as a communicator.
As has Dr. Fauci now. They're both terrible. And Dr. Fauci started out with great credibility, and I liked him, and then he slowly withered that away, and it's destroyed, and he won't come back on the show now because I ask him, you know, you did this backflip and that backflip, and you don't make any sense over here on the lab, and you're wrong about this, and you're right. Does Joe Biden need to fire them all and start over?
And by the way, one more thing. You just played this cut from Javier Becerra. Where's he been this whole time?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people have noticed that Secretary of Health and Human Services, during the greatest public health crisis in generations, has just been absent from all of this. So it's kind of incredible. So Biden has kind of two mess-ups and one silent member of his team. He needs a new team.
He needs a new team. Now, that comes down to November is not that long away. Early voting might be underway in some of these states already. Yeah, who knows? And so you really can't unbake this cake. This cake is inflation, low employment, general malaise. The M word was used by Kamala Harris. I thought the M word was banned inside the Beltway.
I was astonished where she used it. I mean, she used it to say that in the country, in the second year of the pandemic, there's this feeling of malaise, but you're just not supposed to ever use it, especially when your boss, the President of the United States, is being compared, at least by his enemies, to Jimmy Carter, and rather credibly compared to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
she used it.
Credibility gap, I'm not a crook, malaise. These are certain phrases that are in the memory of America that you just don't use. She is the worst, Byron. And I thought she was going to be really good, but something happened to her. They put her into the Biden machine and drained her of all talent and coherence.
Well, you know, by the way, the president handed her the voting rights portfolio as well.
I forgot that.
And the voting rights groups in Atlanta are going to be boycotting her as well as him. I mean, they're a package deal today, President and Vice President going. And by the way, this thing in Atlanta will be framed entirely, as you might imagine, in terms of race. They're going to speak to historically black colleges. They're going to go to the Martin Luther King Memorial, and they're going to go to Ebenezer Baptist Church. So it's going to be all about race, and these civil rights groups are going to be boycotting them.
That's truly remarkable. Byron York, thank you, my friend. Maybe I'll see you on Special Report tonight. Sometimes I'm on with Byron. Follow him on Twitter, at Byron York. Follow me to the next segment, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Wooden ships on the water,
welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. We had to find a Woodstock pump for Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy. What better than see Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's wooden ships? I'm not sure you've ever been in a wooden ship. Have you, Admiral?
Of course I have, many times, starting with my freshman year at the Naval Academy, your plebe year. They put you on wooden sailboats and off you go. We did pretty deep sea work between there and Bermuda over the years. And more importantly, Hugh, I've sailed on the USS Constitution.
Oh, of course.
The oldest commissioned warship in the world, over 200 years old. It was a one-day sail out into Boston Harbor and back, but she got underway and spread sail, and it was a beautiful thing.
Old Ironsides, one place I always took people on the Freedom Trail. Admiral, I want to talk to you about the U.S.-Russia negotiations. I've only met Wendy Sherman once. I'm sure you know the Deputy Secretary of State very well. She was very nice to talk to at the Aspen Defense Forum. She's in talks right now with the deputy secretary, with the deputy foreign minister, whose name is, I want to make sure I get it right.
Ribbikov.
Yeah, Ribbikov.
Ribbikov.
Yeah. And she floated the idea of limiting our missiles and war games. Well, Hugh Hewitt sees that, and that's appeasement. What does Admiral James Stavridis think about that?
Well, one person's appeasement is another person's negotiation, I suppose. But I do think there is trade space in this zone of missiles, both long range, or I should say medium range cruise missiles, and also more controversially, the missile defense systems in Eastern Europe, which we put in place. These are Aegis, as in the same ones that are on our Aegis warships. They're land-based, and they're designed not to go against Russian missiles, but to go against Iranian long-range ballistic missiles. The Russians believe those are implanted as a threat to their strategic forces. Very controversial issue. We're not going to settle it in this broadcast, but I think there is a reasonable conversation to be had between the U.S. and Russia about missile systems. And by the way, I do know Ambassador Wendy Sherman very well. She is who we want in the chair. She's very technical, very astute, knows the issues down to the absolute nugget. She negotiated strategic arms control. She is known very well in Russia and very respected. So no resolution yesterday, Hugh, but what we ought to be doing is trying to find some areas where we can at least continue the conversation to avoid an invasion.
Now, Admiral, I want to depersonalize this because I don't like to bring people's friends into this. Ambassador Sherman then was involved in the 1994 nuclear talks in North Korea, which did not go our way, and the 2016 Iran talks, which I don't think went our way, which you are, I think, okay with. In any event, when Russia moves up 100,000 troops and threatens to invade, and we start offering up what they want, war games, especially the INF Treaty, which we abrogated under Trump, I look at that and say she's under orders from the president and Secretary Blinken. I'm not going to blame Deputy Secretary Sherman, but that's extraordinarily weak. And it sends to the world the same sort of signals that were sent in the 30s to the totalitarian regimes then.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one as follows. The signals we are sending are, I think, pretty strong, and I think we will follow through on them. A massive economic sanctions, threats to significantly arm a Ukrainian insurgency, diplomatic sanction for Russia around the globe. I think those are pretty significant. And the fact that we haven't implemented them yet is something we could debate right now. But I would say it's better to threaten those sanctions, hope you can get Russia to then back down. But I think we would both agree if Russia does cross that border in anger, it's going to require significant response across all three of the zones I just mentioned.
All right. Now, I agree with that last point, but I want to go back academically. In the Czechoslovakian crisis of 1938, Churchill called it an unmitigated disaster and a defeat because concessions were made after Hitler made threats. So Putin moves 100,000 troops to the border. If we make any concessions at all, what intellectually separates that from 38, 39?
Territory. In other words, for your analogy to be complete, we would have to say to the Russians, you know what? Go ahead and take the Donbass. You can have that Russian-speaking section. Take it. It's yours. It would also be capitulation on Crimea. If we were to say, you know what? We'll give in on Crimea. We'll say that that is Russian. That kind of territorial capitulation is what occurred, for example, when Chamberlain came back waving around the infamous document and said, peace in our time. It was because he actually gave up territory. I don't think this administration has any intention of doing that, nor should they. And if they did, I'd be the one arguing the loudest against doing so.
Would you use the A word at that point?
Help me out, the A word?
Appeasement.
Certainly. It was appeasement in 38 to give up territory, and it would be appeasement today to give up territory. And I do not sense a shred of that on the table.
I pray you're right. We'll assess it when it comes out if there's a deal. Let me turn to China with you, Admiral. Earlier this morning, Reuters reported what was in the Financial Times last night, that they have locked down additional cities in China, including Tianjin, which is 62 miles from Beijing, Zhengzhou, Anyang, Xi'an, and Yuzhou. They say it's Omicron. I don't know if we can believe them on anything. Do you think Olympians ought to be going there?
If I were an Olympian, I would be taking a deep breath before I'd go there. And let's face it, China is going to use the one tool that they have used consistently through this whole thing, which is massive authoritarian techniques, everything from massive lockdowns of huge cities, economic isolations, all of that. And I think that if the Chinese were to follow their own protocols, it's going to be difficult for them to conduct these Olympics. So they are in a real quandary here. I think from our perspective, our athletes who are going to be vaccinated, boosted, tested daily, and going into a bubble is what China has said, much like the NBA put the bubble together so effectively two summers ago. I think we can still pull this off, as in have our athletes go and go safely. But China, I think, is going to be put in a very difficult, hypocritical position, because if they go by their protocols, it's going to be hard for them to justify conducting these games.
Now, Admiral, this is a question you can't answer, but it's on my mind. How do we actually know what kind of variant it is? It is not this Omicron emerged in South Africa. We don't know what variant. It got started in China. It could be a different variant. They say it's Omicron, but why would we believe them?
We should take everything that comes from China with a significant grain full of salt. So, yeah, we ought to be very concerned now. In terms of what the variants are, because I'm Greek American and I know the Greek alphabet, I know that what we're looking at next is pi and then rho and then sigma and then tau. I can tell you the names of them. But no, in all seriousness, the one thing I'm sure of is that there will be other variants. Those Greek letters will be energized just like the names are energized in the hurricane list. The question is, will it continue to be milder but more transmissible, which is the most defeatable kind of COVID that we could face? So let's hope it continues to trend in that direction.
There's a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal this morning by a couple of epidemiologists arguing we should not be masking because Omicron's what we wanted, a diluted variant of Delta that we want to spread to allow everyone. I don't know if this is true. I'm not a scientist and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn. But they also noted it can go the other way. That it can be a genetic jumper, meaning that it's not the same kind minus a degree, but it's a different kind that becomes deadlier. I really don't think we can trust the WHO or the CCP. Maybe as a condition of our athletes going, require our medical teams there?
Oh, I'm certain that our athletes will be accompanied by U.S. physicians, U.S. testing capability. And I think that we can allow them to go as long as they follow our protocols, that they're all vaccinated, boosted, masked. But at the end of the day, Hugh, they, the athletes, are going to have to make those kind of decisions on a personal risk basis. And I'm glad I'm not an Olympic gymnast trying to figure out what I want to do about Beijing. I guess it would be a skier, actually.
Yeah, and it's going to be a lot harder than Japan to do the lockdown zone because they're outdoors and people move around. It's just I remember Romney's book, then governor, now Senator Romney, wrote a book after the Salt Lake City Olympics about how difficult it is to move people. People move on buses between those venues. They can't walk.
Indeed. And again, what we owe our athletes, we the United States, is a very clear laydown of exactly what you just pointed out. This is what your experience is going to be like. These are the risks. Are you sure you want to do this?
I hope people listen, Admiral. Admiral James Stavridis, always a pleasure. Retired, his most recent book, The Sailor's Bookshelf, available at Amazon.com. Go and get it. Enjoy it. It's a wonderful, wonderful read. I got it for Christmas. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from the West Coast live. One of the highlights for me since I took over this time slot was moving back to D.C. and attending the swearing-in of Ambassador Rick Grenells, our ambassador to Germany, by Vice President Mike Pence in 2018. He joins me now along with the former Senior Director for European Affairs at the National Security Council. I should also add that Ambassador Grenell is the former acting director of National Intelligence. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome. It's great to have you back, Rick. Let me begin with you, Ambassador Grenell. Wendy Sherman came out yesterday saying, look, we might be able to work on the INF and we might be able to cancel some war games. I said that's appeasement. Admiral Stavridis says, no, that's negotiation. What do you think it is?
Well, let's look at her history. Wendy Sherman has the worst history of negotiation known to man. Look at North Korea. Look at Iran. I don't understand why the Senate allows someone like Wendy Sherman to be our negotiator. She is not the tip of the spear. She's not our best. She's actually one of the worst. She cares very deeply about being liked by the other side. She doesn't have the ability to put down an America First agenda. She is crippled like Biden. She is crippled with consensus, meaning the other side's got to like me. Otherwise, I'm in trouble.
You know, Rick, I call her, what do you want, Wendy? Because she has given away everything in two big high-profile things. But you guys are diplomat. Let me ask you, Andrew Peake, when you were running the Russia desk at the National Security Council, did we give unilateral concessions when Putin threatened us?
No. And you know, I think the former president did a very good job in maintaining a sense of deterrence towards the Russians. You know, they were genuinely unsure about what he would do if they pushed him too far. But Hugh, to your previous point, what I thought was preposterous about Wendy Sherman's comment was we actually got out of the INF treaty because the Russians were cheating on it. So why going back to it? So in exchange for them not invading Ukraine would be a good idea is beyond me.
Now, Rick Grinnell and Admiral Stavridis, who I like, good friend, says, look, appeasement means necessarily territorial concessions. I don't agree with that, but it's intellectually defensible. I'm just afraid that going back to the INF, you are from your DNI days. You know what was going on with INF. We cannot go back to INF because of China.
Yeah, Andrew said it best. They were cheating. They were caught cheating. They were caught cheating over a number of years, and they wouldn't do anything about it. Look, if we're going to have a strategy discussion with the Russians, then what you have to do is you have to show up and have a whole bunch of issues to talk about. You can't just let the Russians determine the list of what they want, and then you give things away expecting to have some sort of a good outcome. Putin right now is looking at Joe Biden and saying, here's my time to militarize the situation and stop NATO expansion. And that's what this is all about. Putin has put himself into a corner now because he has made the situation all about, are you going to allow NATO to expand? And that's where Biden and Wendy Sherman are really failing. They should have brought in a whole bunch of issues to say, let's talk about more than just this particular issue or the things that you want.
So, Andrew Peake, what did we give Ukraine during the Trump era to provide them with better defense against additional Russian hostilities against their borders?
Yeah, I mean, most critically, there was this issue of lethal aid that Trump gave them that Obama had not. If you remember back in 2014 and 2015, there was this endless kind of hand-wringing about whether we could give them bulletproof vests or not, anti-drone technology, or if that would be too provocative, as if when you're standing on the brink of a Russian invasion, the provocations are on you. That's your fault somehow. So, and then almost immediately after the new administration comes in, regardless of whether you think Ukraine should be part of NATO or not, immediately that lethal aid gets halted and drawn down to the point where I think we've given them two patrol boats over the last 11 months instead of the 150 million or so that Trump was rolling out in exchange.
Andrew Peake, let me stay with you. Oh, go ahead, Rick.
Let me just add one point to this because I think Andrew's on to a really good point. We can have a discussion with the Russians. Who are, observers or have offices at NATO, and they're there, and there's a semblance of coordination. We could have a discussion with them about Ukraine, Georgia, Finland, and talk to them in a way that they recognize that we, NATO, exist to make sure that there is no more Russian expansion, that the satellite countries are gone. We need to be very firm on this conversation. But we also then can talk to them so that we don't stick them in the eye. We're not going to roll back any of these former Soviet bloc countries into the sphere of Russia. They are part of the West. And what we need to be very firm, and maybe this is a discussion at the UN where the Russians care about these issues, but we need to be very firm about we're not rolling back, but what can we do to make sure you don't feel like we're just going to take over and roll in and start a war. And I think that's where Donald Trump was very clear to say, you know, we're not looking to start a war. We're not looking to poke you in the eye. But make no mistake, we will put the toughest sanctions on you if we have to. It's about behavior. Act like an international member, a member of the international community.
Rick Grinnell, let me draw on your German experience as our ambassador to Berlin. The classic rationale for NATO was to keep America in, Russia out, and Germany down. Well, now Germany's not down. They're unified, and they're selling us out on Nord Stream. So to a certain extent, yeah, isn't Germany a partner with Putin in the appeasement that is underway?
Yeah, they've accepted not only this gas pipeline, but a whole bunch of influence that comes through that pipeline. Look, things are happening in Germany. The Greens are now part of the government. The Greens now have the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of Defense, two women.
The Greens have defense? The Greens?
Yes. And they're two individuals who are very inexperienced. And so my point is that, you know, we need to probably be looking a little bit more to France right now, because the Germans are going to be in a period of learning. And also, I will just say that we have to remember that the German foreign policy move right now is to be more like Switzerland. They want to be everybody's friend. They want Germany first economically. They want to sell a lot of cars in China. And they really don't want to take a position that's different than trying to sell and grow their economy. They do not have the same threat assessment towards Russia or China or Iran that we do. So why would we try to do consensus? And that's what Andrew and I tried to do in this Wall Street Journal piece, is to lay out how did we get here? Because how we got here is the real lesson to make sure we don't get here again. We can't show such weakness and then be surprised that we're put into a corner of really bad decisions in Ukraine right now.
Now, let me go to Andrew. When you were running the European desk for the NSC, Andrew Peake, you have every clearance. You've seen everything that we know about Europe. And you know that we allowed Russian oligarchs to go and buy a lot of land and to live where they want to live and put their boats where they want to put them. One of the things I've talked with various people is about preemptive disintermediation of some of those assets from the Putin's inner circle. I'm not saying disappropriate everything, but if you blink out some of their hidden bank accounts, don't say anything publicly, just take their money. Did that ever cross anybody's mind when you were at the NSC?
Yes, of course. Of course, you know, we levied sanctions on this oligarch, Deripaska, and others. But what they really care about is not being able to go to Europe. And so, to Rick's point, it is about leveraging those sanctions to achieve the Europeans agreeing with them, not just agree to whatever the Europeans want on sanctions, but actually build up an enforcement regime, which means they can't go to Italy and the UK and wherever else. That's what they care about.
Do we know where Putin's money is, his offshore money?
Sure. Oh, good. Of course. I mean, we're really on top of, you know, he and all of his cronies and where they have influence around the world. But, you know, to your point, Hugh, this is a great point for not only Russia, but for China. The kids of the oligarchs, the kids of the insiders who come to the United States to go to school, you shut that down, that makes a big difference.
Don't go anywhere, gentlemen, if I can keep you for another segment. Their op-ed in the Journal this morning is U.S. Mistakes Fed Putin's Ukraine Temptation. I want to get back into that for one more segment with Rick Grinnell, Andrew Peake. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I see the red moon rising. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, playing Woodstock music in honor of the impresario who began Woodstock's death yesterday. Now, not everyone could be out front. Some of us had to be, you know, handling the backstage stuff. But my guests are too young. Ambassador Rick Grinnell, Andrew Peake, they're way too young for the Woodstock generation. I want to ask them, though, about something from even before that, Finland. The Finlandization of Finland was something I grew up with when the Cold War was at height. Russia's trying to Finlandize Finland again, Rick Cornell. You mentioned in the Wall Street Journal piece today by you and Andrew Peek, U.S. mistakes fed Putin's Ukraine temptation. What are they achieving? Finland stood up and said, you can't tell us we can't join NATO. What are they trying to do with Finland?
Well, as you know, Finland is an enhanced opportunity partner, as we say, at NATO. And what that means is they get to coordinate. And in reality, they get to keep thinking for decades whether or not they want to join NATO, but they get to coordinate with NATO. So it's the perfect position for them to kind of play both sides. But I think when they're told by Russia or when Russia says Finland should not become a full member of NATO, then the Finns stand up and say, wait a minute, don't tell us what to do. And if you look at a map, Finland and Russia are almost identical. They're not only neighbors, but they share a lot of resources. And so I think that this is a moment for Putin to realize that when Finland stands up and says, don't tell us what to do, this is not just the former Soviet bloc countries. You know, he's watching Belarus very closely. He's looking at the other former Soviet blocs and trying to say, how do I get them in my sphere? And that's the opportunity that the United States needs to take in sitting down and talking about a variety of issues with the Russians. Don't just talk about the issues that they want and then start giving away, different things that we think are valuable, but know will please them, and then they're happy. We've got to change the dialogue to a much larger set of issues.
Andrew Peek, based on your time as director of Europe at the National Security Council, is there any chance that Ukraine can do to Putin's invasion, if it occurs, what Finland did to Stalin's in the Winter War in 1939 and 40? In other words, hit them much harder than they're expecting.
Gosh, you know, Hugh, I served alongside Finnish troops in Afghanistan. I have to tell you, they have an incredibly impressive martial tradition to that then they traded a little bit out of necessity after the Second World War for a more neutral status. I think the situations are very different. You know, unfortunately, the winter weather that is coming in Ukraine from, say, mid-January to early March actually favors the Russians with their greater mobility and their greater armor vehicles than it does the Ukrainians, whereas back in the winter war and the continuation war, which you were alluding to, the mobility was actually with the Finns, the famous ski troops and the blizzards that were in the great battle of Suomussalmi. So I think there's a chance, but I don't think we should be under any illusion that Russia cannot reasonably easily impose its military will.
I know. Grinnell and Peek, you cover Turkey, and people didn't see that coming. And I want to give you, Ambassador, the last minute. Turkey is a major deal that has been mishandled by the Biden administration. And you call Erdogan. I went with John Bolton to Turkey and got thoroughly briefed by the former national security advisor that Turkey is not our friend, but they're not Russia's friend either. And we got to remember that.
Well, that's the whole thing about diplomacy, right? You've got to look and make sure that all of your non-friends are not pushed into a corner against you. It's one of the reasons why I believe, you know, I spent 8 years at the UN. You cannot have the Russians and Chinese organizing against you. And they are not natural partners. Turkey was handled brilliantly by Donald Trump. He made sure that Erdogan knew, look, I'm not your enemy, but I don't have to be your friend either. And when you misbehave, I will bring down heavy sanctions, and I'm not afraid to do it quickly. I can't tell you how many world leaders would say to me, we just don't know what Donald Trump is going to do. And they would say it in a way of complaining. But I would always think in my mind, this is exactly where we need to be.
That's Nixonian. That's an asset. Ambassador Rick Grinnell, former National Security Council member Andrew Peek at the Europe desk. Thank you both. Great Wall Street Journal op-ed. Must reading. I'm sure Senator Cotton has already done so. He's coming up next. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live from the West Coast. America, Hugh Hewitt, live from the West Coast. 2 days ago in the Washington Examiner, Beckett Adams had a column entitled, "It's Time for the Press to Take Tom Cotton Seriously." We've been taking Senator Cotton seriously since 2010, so I'm a little bit ahead of the pack there. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning to you. I appreciate you taking me seriously. I don't take myself too seriously, but good to be back on with you in the new year. Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
And to you and your family and Arkansans everywhere. Do Arkansans have a dog in the Georgia-Alabama tussle last night?
Different people with whom I've spoken over the last week rooting for different teams. Obviously, it was exciting to have two SEC teams in there and an exciting game. Georgia really turned it on at the end.
Well, you know, that ESPN mob got that arranged. Senator Cotton, let's talk about China, then Putin. First, there are reports this morning in the Financial Times and Reuters that COVID's long march across China has continued to within 60 miles of Beijing. Now, they've locked down another city. That's the fifth city that they've locked down. Should American athletes be going? We don't even know what variety is. We can't trust them.
Hugh, I, a couple months ago, said that we should have a complete and total boycott of these games. Last summer, I asked the Biden administration what their plan was to protect our athletes, to protect them from ubiquitous electronic surveillance, to protect them from DNA harvesting for part of China's massive DNA collection plans, to protect them from kidnapping and hostage taking. And the Biden administration had months to develop a plan and to articulate it. They couldn't do so. So at the end of last year, I said that for the safety of our athletes, we should boycott these games. And in addition, we should boycott them because of Chinese crimes against the civilized world and its genocide against its own people. The rampaging COVID outbreaks across China are just another reason why these games should not proceed. This happened before, you remember. The Tokyo Games were postponed from the summer of 2020 to the summer of 2021. If the Summer Games can be moved, given they are many times larger and more complicated than the Winter Games, surely the Winter Games can be delayed and then ultimately moved as well.
At a minimum, would not our CDC demand an opportunity to examine on the ground, in situ, whatever it is that is rampaging its long march through China? Because I don't believe the Chinese Communist Party. Nobody should.
Well, you shouldn't believe the Chinese Communist Party. They have lied repeatedly throughout this pandemic. They continue to lie today. But this is part of my concern about the Biden administration's lack of a plan. They are basically at the Chinese Communist Party's But they are subject to the Chinese Communist Party's decisions on who they will let in. On basic security, Hugh, we mean like law enforcement officers who are there to keep our athletes safe in the Olympic Village. And I'll just say that that is not adequate. So there's certainly no chance the Chinese are going to let in scientists from our CDC or other agencies in the government, given how much they have worked to cover up the origins and the trajectory of this virus. Again, China has for 2 years said essentially they've had no COVID cases. Everyone knows that's not the case. Everyone knows that the Omicron variant is rampaging across China as it is across the rest of the world. China's vaccines are almost totally ineffective against it. So this is a very perilous situation into which we're putting our athletes. We shouldn't do it. In fact, the IOC shouldn't proceed with these games.
They should not. Let me turn to Russia. Yesterday, Deputy Secretary Sherman emerged from a meeting with her counterpart in Russia and announced that and floated that we are considering suspending war games and reentering the INF. This is appeasement, in my view. Now, Admiral Stavridis and I had a polite disagreement. He says, if you don't give up territory, it's not appeasement. I think this is appeasement. What do you think, Senator Cotton?
I think it is appeasement. Vladimir Putin is solely responsible for the crisis on Ukraine's borders. Vladimir Putin is also the reason why we have, for instance, a larger rotational troop presence conducting exercises in Poland and the Baltic countries. Remember, Hugh, that only started after he invaded and annex Crimea in 2014 and then continued to invade eastern Ukraine. There's a reason why the Poles and the Baltic states wanted more NATO troops conducting exercises on their territory. It was because of Vladimir Putin's behavior.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and it's furthermore, it would be strategic folly of the highest order to reenter the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty.
Yes.
You remember, that was a treaty between the United States and Soviet Russia that said that we would not deploy intermediate range Russell missiles to Europe. We wouldn't even manufacture them. Russia was violating that treaty by manufacturing intermediate range missiles. So we were the only country in the world that was willingly depriving ourselves of this very potent strike capability. And the consequence of it was not seen in Europe. It was seen in the Pacific, where China has built thousands of missiles that can target Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, and Guam. And we had nothing. So re-entering the INF treaty simply to get Vladimir Putin to pull back his troops in the Ukraine border would be a strategic folly of the first degree in the Pacific, where we need to build missiles and deploy them into the Western Pacific as fast as we can.
But strategic folly is Undersecretary, Deputy Secretary Sherman's middle name. I mean, also, what do you want, Wendy? She went to Korea in 1994, and we got that terrible deal. She went to Iran as part of the team in 2016. We got JCPOA. She is in the business of giving away American national interest. Is she not? I mean, she's a nice person, but she is an appeasement person.
It is a close competition between Wendy Sherman and Susan Rice of who is more closely connected to every Democratic foreign policy debacle of the last 30 years. But you're right that she has been in the middle of almost every bad, weak, appeasing treaty or other agreement over the last 30 years. Look, Vladimir Putin created this crisis. He created it from his actions over the last 15 years. He created it from his actions over the last 3 months. To enter into agreements like saying we would no longer deploy or even manufacture intermediate range missiles, which are critical to deterring China, or that we will hang our NATO allies out dry in countries like Poland, Hungary, and the Baltic states, in return for Vladimir Putin simply putting his tanks and personnel carriers in reverse, something that he can obviously then reverse again in 6 months, would be deeply unwise. Our policy should be simply that we will have massive, massive economic consequences for Russia should they invade Ukraine. That should start with in the United States Senate this week, by the way, Hugh, with Democrats voting, as they did for 4 years in the Trump era, to impose sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that sends Russian gas through the Baltic Sea to Germany.
Last question, Senator Cotton. Lots of Russian oligarchs. Yeah, I mean, if you go to London, you cannot not run into a Russian oligarch. They are everywhere in Europe. Ought they to be expelled? Ought their money to be disintermediated? And should we blink out some of Putin's money abroad, which we know where it is? Andrew Peake just confirmed that for me. So did Rick Grinnell. Before they do anything, as kind of a shot across the bow so that they know we're serious, because this gang does not have a reputation for being serious.
Yeah. So, Hugh, there's always good reasons to try to sanction and claw back a lot of the ill-gotten gains of the gangster oligarchs who've surrounded the Putin regime for 20 years now. I think a shot across the bow might send the right signal. Again, that's something that's it's always called for, given the aggression of Putin and his cronies against the United States, against our partners in the West, and invading countries, assassinating their targets on our soil, interfering with our democratic processes, and so forth.
Senator Tom Cotton, always a pleasure to speak with you, Senator. Happy New Year to you. And I don't know that Arkansas football is coming back, but I hope we see you in a championship game before I go to heaven, which could, you know, you got 30 years there, Senator. You got some time.
All right. Thank you.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.